How would your life be different if you could face difficult times with rejoicing? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author. We're continuing our 13-week series on the New Testament letters of 1st and 2nd Peter. My conversation partners, as always through this quarter, are Dr. Jody Washburn and Dr. Alden Thompson, both professors of Old Testament here at Walla Walla University with me. How would your life be difficult if you could, or different, if you could face these difficult times with rejoicing? Do you face difficult times with joy?
Well, this is probably not the answer you would want or expect, Brant, but given my rather buoyant temperament, I think it's too easy for me simply to shrug at problems. Huh. And that doesn't help people. When people are going through difficulties, you need someone to cry with them, to weep with them. And while I don't simply, I think I'm enough of a trained pastor, I don't just simply say, hey, cheer up, things are going to get better. I fear that sometimes my attitude, it kind of moves in that direction. So I think that if one shrugs too easily at difficult times, I think there are certain hazards with that.
Yeah, and maybe the connotations of the word rejoicing are too narrow.
Say more.
I think of Anne Voskamp's book on 1,000 Gifts, where she takes up the discipline of noticing and of writing down what she's grateful for. Anything to the birth of her child, all the way to the feel of the wheat in her hands. I mean, anything, everything is a gift of God given to remind me of His love for me. And I think also of stories like Carl Wilkins shares from the genocide in Rwanda, of going to orphanages, you know, and you see right there, not enough food, not enough water. And what is it? It's one orphan sharing their small spoonful of food with another one. And the beauty and the pain are together. Two sides of one coin, not necessarily I'm suffering over here and then I'm rejoicing over here, but they come together. And I feel like that is the Christian way. You know, we're broken and given. We give thanks and then we give out into the world. But the being broken is part of our following of Christ. Suffering is part of the journey.
There is a troubling and beautiful quote from C.S. Lewis that I've avoided for a long time, but in recent months, I found it really very meaningful. It's in his book, Letters to Malcolm, chiefly on prayer. But he says, I will not believe in the managerial God and His general laws. If there is a providence at all, everything is providential, and every providence is a special providence. Now, what that has forced me to do is to take seriously when something happens, even when I lose something. You know, I'd say, well, what's the Lord up to?
The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Is it? But I can look at various ways. I can say, is it that He wants me to be more careful so I don't lose things? Or is there something along the way that in my searching for what I know is lost, I find something that I didn't even know was lost? See, there are all kinds of possibilities, but it comes very close to me to praying without ceasing. So that whatever happens, you look at that through the lens of God's guidance. Mm-hmm. I'm not enough of a Calvinist to say, Romans 8, that all things work together for good. But I do want to say that in everything, God works through things to bring about what is good.
Yeah. And if not in my external circumstances, certainly some part of my character. And it seems this is where Peter is going. And Alden, maybe you'd be willing to read chapter 4 of 1 Peter here, verses 12 and 13 from your version. I'm curious to see how it reads.
Okay, this is 4, 12, and 13. Dear friends, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal that has come on you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice, inasmuch as you participate in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may be overjoyed when His glory is revealed.
Are there stages to this rejoicing? Are there times when we find we can rejoice and times when it's more difficult to? Peter's arguing for an audience that is struggling through what he calls a fiery trial. My version says a fiery trial that is coming to test you.
Well, I cannot understand the martyrs who sang as the flames leaped around them. I just don't understand that. I believe that it happened, but I can't understand it.
Are you suggesting perhaps in the, or maybe not, you didn't say it in these exact words, Alden, but I'm wondering if there is a sense in which we go through times of trial and suffering, and when those times are extremely dark times of trial, some of the devotional masters speak of dark nights of the soul even, where we go through personal times of anguish in our wrestling with God, that in those times there is a special measure of grace given. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine singing in flames if I were being burned at the stake for my faith. But those who did had an experience that I don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do know that I don't know how many people have told me that the really important things that they've learned in life have come through the difficult times.
Huh.
We don't want to think of that. I mean, I tell the Lord all the time, I'm a coward, Lord. Teach me my lessons the easy way. I don't want to have to learn them the hard way. But it's amazing what we can learn if we open up, even if it's been through very difficult times.
He says that we should rejoice. Peter encourages us to rejoice because when we go through difficult times, we are suffering with Jesus and as he did. I mm-hmm. think about Paul's words in his little book of Colossians. He says, I and my body fill up what was lacking in Christ's afflictions. And I look at the life of Jesus and think, well, surely he was afflicted enough.
Yeah.
Paul says, no, the body of Jesus in the form of his people and the form of his church is still suffering in this world. We still face trials. And when you suffer as part of the body, especially for issues of faith, you are joining Christ in suffering just the way he did.
And I think we need to recognize that if you look at Jesus as the example, he said he certainly did not consistently rejoice in difficult
times.
In the garden, let this cup pass from me. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? That doesn't sound to me like rejoicing.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
And we follow Christ's example. That's Paul's reasoning for asking us to, you could say, embrace suffering. But Jesus certainly was crying out in lament,
yep.
only part of which was an acknowledgement of the sovereignty of God and the promise that there would be deliverance. Much of that lament from Psalm 22 is pure anguish mm-hmm. with no voiced hope in a future rescue or relief.
In fact, if you diagram Psalm 22, in fact, most of the lament psalms, they go down deep,
yep.
but then they come out again. The one notable exception is Psalm 88, which goes straight down and stays down. See? Almost half of the psalms are complaints, laments.
Yep.
See, and so I think that, you know, while our good brother Paul tells us to rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice, and I would like to be able to do that, the realities are that God's people have learned how to cry, and they cry with some vigor and enthusiasm.
And that's okay, because
yeah.
sometimes it's in the crying, side by side,
sure.
that we realize there's a way through.
Is rejoicing an emotion that I feel, or is it an attitude with which I face the suffering? Because I can face suffering with an attitude of resignation, I guess it's going to just happen, or I can say, this is rather thrilling that I'm going through this difficult time, but it doesn't mean I don't cry, it doesn't mean I don't weep. But I can have an attitude that's positive towards the suffering. I'm wondering if that's more where Peter is going with this. Because I don't find that when I've gone through some recent struggles that I've been overjoyed and simply wanting to get out my guitar and start singing praise songs.
Yeah. Well, I think that, to mention an example which is still very close to us in this community is the reaction of Daryl and Barbara Bigger
yes.
to the rape and murder of their daughter.
See?
It was just horrendous. And yet, out of that, they have developed a wonderful ministry of forgiveness.
And reconciliation.
Yeah. Just amazing. But still, I almost never hear Daryl speak in public without his voice cracking.
Yeah, sometimes the pain never goes away.
I don't know how a father can live with that knowledge about the death of his daughter and not just be consumed by it. It's just it's terrible.
And we long for Jesus to set things right. But in the meantime, we do face trials. We see people who have suffered perhaps unjustly. How can I know if I'm suffering for the right reasons, though? Because certainly there are things I can do to bring difficult times upon myself. I can make stupid decisions, right? It's possible for me to ruin a relationship by saying something wrong and suffering. How can I know if I'm actually suffering for the right reasons? Is it possible that suffering persecution or backlash for a political or social reason or a cause can be confused with a spiritual one?
You may need some help from someone else who can see things more clearly than you can. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. a pastor whose ministry in a church has turned sour, he'll simply say, well, I've just been too prophetic in my ministry. Maybe. And sometimes I think we need help from others to be able to distinguish between, no, that's probably not a wise decision you made there, and so you're suffering here as a result of your own sins.
Yeah, and it's not cookie cutter. I mean, there is the principle of Jesus laying down his life for the life of others. We can follow that principle, but I don't think there's a clear cut 1, 2, 3, check it off and know for sure. It's something where we need the guidance of the Spirit and other people. Yeah. I mean, the Spirit is speaking to us through other people as well.
I don't know how widespread the feeling is that when something happens, you know, it's the inverse of The Sound of Music. I must have done something good.
Yeah.
When something bad happens, I must have done something bad, see?
And Jesus combated that.
Yeah.
Neither this man nor his parents sinned.
But that the glory of God might be seen in his
sure.
life. It's been allowed to happen. Bad things have been allowed to come. As we finish up our discussion here, 1 Peter 4:17-19 speaks about a coming judgment. And Peter argues from the Old Testament that it is time for judgment to begin with the house of God, and quotes from the Septuagint, the Old Testament Greek text, if a righteous one is scarcely saved or saved with difficulty, where will the ungodly and the sinner appear in the last judgment? But Peter says that judgment should begin with the house of God. Why at the house of God? What?
Well, it's probably the same thing as Moses and Aaron. You know, they were the leaders, and they were held most responsible for when they fell apart.
So judgment begins with those who confess or profess
faith. Those who
faith.
Have known most about mm-hmm. God. It seems to me that that would be the place you'd want to start.
So in a sense, accepting the name Jesus is a very serious one if judgment is going to begin with me.
As C.S. Lewis says, if we were stronger, we might be less tenderly treated. If we were braver, we might be sent with far less help to defend far more desperate posts in the great battle.
Well, our time is about up. Thank you both for your conversation. It's been delightful. Thank you also to Jared Miller, our program engineer. And next week, we're going to be looking at servant leadership. Thank you all for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.